Well, we knew we were just going to have two of us this afternoon. The others have,
okay,
have conflicts.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, let's go ahead and see what we need to do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good afternoon. This is a special bargaining session between the UFF chapter at UCF and the UCF Board of Trustees bargaining team. We're here to discuss an MOU that was proposed at our last session by the BOT side. Charlie, can you share the draft minutes?
Where's the share button? Oh, there it is. It's green. Sorry.
We miss Briannis.
Let's see.
Right. Looks fine to me. But I think you probably want to. Oh, I see. That's right. I was the only one because it was just, there was nobody else. Was anybody else there? I think it was just Robert and I.
Charlie, I've got a couple of changes.
Well, I may want to. Is that Talat was the only one on the bargaining team that was.
Yeah, you're right.
So, and then what, Chuck?
It may be that. It's just due to the labels I put on the handouts, but are you sure that handout one says winter session, not winter intercession?
No. But okay, I will make a note.
Offline, we can check that.
All right, anything else?
It's probably me. You probably did it correctly.
I think you do want to say intercession, right?
Yeah.
Well, if the document says something else when we post it, we ought to use the name that we posted.
I will double check. Any other objections? Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Talat, before we ask you to respond to what we shared, there are some questions that you left me with last time that I wanted to follow up on. I did reach out to Dr. Barry, the Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Studies, who's the one who was kind of leading this effort to institute the winter intercession and the Maymester. And I asked her the question that your team had raised about, you know, whether there had been a survey done of the students. And what I found out is there was not a survey that was done, but Dr. Barry and some of the other folks from undergraduate studies met with the president of the SGA and the chair of academic affairs in student government, and they had a very positive reaction to this proposal. So that there was an effort to reach out to the student body, but it was to the leadership of the student body. She confirmed with me that there are no expected changes in the regularly scheduled offerings. So people were wondering, are we going to cancel a course that normally runs in the fall and expect it to go in the winter intercession? That's not the case. We're expecting that there will be, you know, additional opportunities for students to take some courses during these two special terms. And enrollments will be determined by the colleges that offer these courses. It will also be up to the colleges to provide the funding, just as it is for other courses that the colleges offer. Any resources that are needed are going to have to come from the colleges. I also reached out to USF and wanted to find out a little bit more about their experiences with the Maymester and the winter intercession there. I don't know exactly when it started, but talking to one gentleman from there, I got the feeling it was about 10 years ago that they started doing this. And I asked and got data for the last 2 years. So for the 2021 Maymester, the 2022 Maymester, and then the 21-22 winter intercession and the 22-23 winter intercession. So the last four special terms that they had. And what I found is during the winter intercessions, they offer roughly 20 sections of courses. So that tells me, you know, there's one or two maybe on average per college. So there's not a tremendous number of courses that they're offering. And they've been doing it for a while. I wouldn't anticipate that we'd be able to offer that many starting out in the first year. In the May masters, they've had between 25 and 29 sections. So they have a few more sections in the May master than they do in the winter intersession. And it just worked out that on average, the enrollment in those courses, which certainly for the winter intersession, they're fully online. Most of the ones I think in the May master are probably fully online as well. The enrollment is just, average enrollment is just under 60 in those sections, which is not unusual, I think, for some fully online classes to have.
And they're also doing all online?
At least in the winter intersession. The May master, even here in the May master, wouldn't necessarily be fully online.
I see. Okay. And
so I think that gives us, certainly gave me a better sense of how many courses, you know, we might be able to offer. You know, I think we'd be doing really well if we got to 20 in the first year. And but it's not going to be every department doing this. You know, I can't imagine a department offering more than two probably during the winter intersession. I also just kind of played around on the internet, just did some searches looking at universities that had May masters or winter sessions on their website. Sometimes I could see things about courses. Sometimes it was like us, you had to log in order to see the schedule, and I really couldn't learn very much. But it seemed to me that a lot of the courses that were being taught were what I would call special interest courses. So they would be courses that seemed to be suitable for free elective type courses. Perhaps for some majors, they would be electives that would count toward the degree, toward that particular program. But it looked like a lot of them were kind of special interests. You know, it may have been the faculty in some cases teaching something that they really wanted to teach and they didn't have an opportunity to do so at another time. We're still hoping that when courses are offered, they're things that will help people graduate. But as we talked about before, it's extremely unlikely. It's impossible in the winter intersession to offer a lab course, for example. That's just not going to happen. But that's a little bit about the experience at USF.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to know because, you know, we did do a survey. So we had lots of questions among ourselves because Robert and I were the only one who were at the meeting. And so there were discussions in the bargaining group. And then there were lots of questions that came up. So maybe I'll share my screen. And this is just one of them. So essentially, and we can share with you the survey question also. But do you see my screen?
Yes, thank you, I can.
Okay, so we had 92 people respond. This was, of course, something that we were trying to get response as quickly as possible. And I think we gave them only a week or so. But so essentially, it was quite interesting. These are the makeup, these are the questions. So what best describes your instructional rank or position at UCF? So about 40% of the people were tenure or tenure earning, 53 were instructor or lecturers, and then few others. And then this was quite interesting. So there were about 39% that supported it, but then there were 61% that either opposed it, 27% opposed it, and 33% wanted more information. So that was quite a division of the pie there. And then I think, then about the compensation, I think most of them felt that it was fair, which was, the question was the compensation would be 12.5% and so on. of a 9-month salary. And so most felt that it was a fair compensation. A minority did not think so, but then, and about 20% needed more information. So this one was interesting. According to this provision, neither employees nor their spouse or dependent children under the age of 26 may receive tuition waiver for enrollment and so on. So about 76% said it would not impact them, but then this could directly impact me financially. That was 23%, and about 76 said it would not. So that was that. I'll stop sharing that. But
then, can I ask a question about the survey? I think it was the second question on the first page, where it talked about, you know, I don't remember exactly how the question was worded, but the responses were, I'm not opposed, or I need more information. I don't know how to interpret that.
I'm going to tell you more about it.
Okay, great.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, this is not the end. And I hope you're ready for a long meeting. because it was quite interesting. In fact, it was, you know, I was... looking at that, and I have two sets of, I'm trying to decide which one I should. So let me just say a few things.
Give us the long one. We want the real long version.
Very good. We will go with that. It's actually very, very educational, and I was really impressed by how thoughtful people were. Okay, so I'll just first paraphrase what I got out of it. So what I got out of it were some people basically, there were very few who said that this is something that would benefit me and I'm glad to do it. There were a good number of people who said, I'm not going to do it because it would drive me crazy, but I know that this may be good for some of my colleagues, so I'm not going to stand in their way. So that would be that. The other was that so those were two aspects, right? Then the whole then there were lots of concerns, and they were, you know, rightly taken, right? So for example, one question. So this is like my overall thing. Before I go to the long version, I do have a long version, and I will take you all through that. So one of them was that you had mentioned that we want to increase the graduation rate. So in that case, what we were wondering was whether you would have a list of courses that is keeping students from graduating. And the reason for asking that is that, you know, you showed us the metric, right? And this is one item that is keeping us from reaching the preeminent status. And so whether this MOU addresses that or not is a good question. But I think a good question to be had also is what can we do so that that is met, right? And there may be two different questions. So one would be, what are the courses that are really holding back students from graduating? I asked that because I think one of the physics courses is one of them. It seems like that is holding people back from graduating. I may be wrong. But then if we knew what would be were the courses that were holding them back, and that that this MOU, then we would could evaluate how this MOU would help us get closer to our goals. So that is some information that we'd like to have. Then the other is that if it is not targeting the graduation rate, then what are the other things that we collectively have in mind? In other words, could this be an avenue for people to try out new ideas, you know, explore different courses that they couldn't have offered otherwise? And then this whole thing about equity and about all of that comes in. So we should have some idea about whether that is also something that we have in mind and not just the graduation rate.
I'm sorry, I think I missed something there.
Oh, so, you know, the second was let's say that it is not just the graduation rate that we're talking about, but rather the ability to offer certain courses that we couldn't be offering under normal circumstances. And then, you know, this may be a way to get a feeler for how things go, you know? So that could be one. And so the other is that, are we thinking of this as a pilot program where, you know, we have some ideas, we promote it, and then see after 1 year or so, what exactly happened? Did we achieve any of our goals? And then the last one, which was in a lot of the questions that came up, basically the financial aspect of it. Is there a separate new pot of money that is going to be used for this? And the main thing was that there were concerns that summer sessions are not fully funded. There are problems with that. So if we are not able to support the summer sessions, then why are we taking on this? Who's going to pay for it? So that's one of the concerns that is there. Now, then there are more of the logistics which we can worry about, you know, that is that the 12-month, people on 12-month contract, they apparently, the way it is written, they will not be compensated at least for one of the terms. But I think that is a language that we could look into.
Well, that's for the Maymaster, that's true. That's basically an in-load teaching.
So the Maymaster, they will not be paid, but they would be paid for the...
already being paid.
They're already
being paid. They would be in-load for them.
And they will be paid for that. So that's something to look into. Then there were these questions about... these are the logistics, okay? The questions were... if you're going to have this winter intercession, then would library and all supporting staff, IT and so on, would they be required to remain open? Because right now, you know, they are closed for almost 2 weeks. So what is going to happen to them? And if they're going to be asked to remain open, then are they going to be reimbursed, or are they going to be rewarded then for the extra time that they're putting in? I don't think we have any, there's nothing in the MOU that talks about what will happen to libraries, how will library be available, how will IT support be available during the winter. Summer is not a problem because summer, they're there in any case. So that, you know, IT, CDL, and then health and, other mental health and regular health services and so on. Then the one other thing which is, which goes on is that this thing about equitable access for faculty who wish to be teaching, or is it really something that's going to be basically given to adjuncts and therefore, you know, not available to everybody else? So, you know, the way I'm looking at it is that, you know, it may sound like a really great thing if somebody who's not able to offer a course under normal circumstances, but can show through this that this is something that could be a great offering, right? So that's different from basically saying, oh no, we want to make money on these courses and we're going to pay the person who is the cheapest and then do that, right? And then the other one, and again, got highlighted was that, they're saying that it's voluntary right now, but maybe that's not how it's going to happen in the end, and people will be coerced into teaching even if they don't want to, okay? And so, having said that, I would now treat you to the full thing.
You want me to respond to some of those?
Yes, please do.
And thank you for reaching out to your membership and getting us some feedback. And before I address some of the things that you brought up, which I think are interesting points, What we're trying to do is figure out how do we pay people for doing the winter intercession or the Maymester. That some of the things that you're raising, I think, are decisions that are made by chairs and deans and not things that we really negotiate here. But it's, I think it's useful to remind us of some of these things that people are thinking about, they're asking about, and, you know, we can certainly relay that information.
Go ahead.
Well, there are a number of courses that I don't have access to right now that the university has looked at that are courses that are, you know, critical for students to graduate, you know. Just because of my background in operations research, I start thinking about critical paths. You know, there's some path that's the longest one through a network of courses that a student has to take. And if I stumble on one of those courses on the critical path, it's going to delay my graduation. So there are different courses that impact each student. What we know is there are a lot of STEM courses that appear usually fairly early in some of the STEM programs where there's very high enrollment, and they cause problems because people just simply can't get into the courses. And they also have high DFW rates, and sometimes those courses have to be repeated. So a course that's difficult to get into it and may have to be repeated, that can cause a problem for a student. But those are probably not the kinds of courses that we can offer in these accelerated terms, and we certainly understand that. But that is really up to the deans and the chairs and the faculty and the various units to figure out what are the appropriate things to offer during these terms.
And they have you, that discussion has not been had, right?
I don't know what it hasn't taken place with me. That I can say for sure. You know, exactly where the deans are in all this, I can't speak to that.
Go ahead. Did anybody have?
I got a couple more things I'd like to say. I'm very interested in hearing what you've got prepared also. If we're not targeting graduation rate, well, we are. I mean, that's certainly the big driver for this. And because I don't think we're going to be able to offer some of these very critical courses for programs like STEM programs, the courses that I think are going to be helpful are courses that students can take as electives that are, you know, if somebody would have to take 18 hours in the spring, if they didn't take this winter intercession course, now they take a course and they only have to take 15 hours in the spring, and now graduation's looking more feasible for them. That's a good thing. But what that course is, I can't say. But I think there are going to be many students that just simply need to find an elective course, and that may be possible. There also may be some critical GEP courses that may be amenable to this kind of format. Just because of my own background, I'm not able to really speak to those GEP courses.
But that data may be there, right, Chuck? Somewhere, I mean, you do have a list of students. Well, I mean, basically it's four-year graduation we're talking about, right?
Yeah, and undergraduate studies is going to know, the problematic courses, which are the problematic combinations of courses that they try to, you know, advise students not to take at the same time. A lot of that information is there. And it isn't necessarily that we're going to try to offer those specific courses during these accelerated terms. We're trying to provide opportunities for students to accelerate their graduation, regardless of what they may end up taking during those new terms. So there may be opportunities to try new ideas for courses. I really got that impression looking at what other universities are offering in these terms, that there are things that I would say almost look like pet courses for faculty. But if they're going to help students, it's an elective course that will help a student. It's something that I've never taught before. This is an opportunity. It might work. Is it a chance to pilot programs? Yes, I think it is certainly a chance to pilot courses. That may be an opportunity. That's not my call. I don't think that's really what we're bargaining about. That's up to the deans and the chairs and the faculty to determine what are the right things to do.
I don't think we need to screen share anymore. Thank you.
Well, I was, why are you saying
unless that? You wanted to go through it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I've just got a couple more things here. I'm almost done. I appreciate your patience on this. With the winter intercession, basically everything's shut down. Everything is fully online. There's going to be very few resources available. We're not going to have the library open. The library is going to be closed. There may be somebody that can be reached in an emergency for IT. IT can't completely shut down, but they're not going to be IT people walking around the campus during that time. Mental health services, I don't know for sure, but I got to believe that those are available every day of the year to students, that there's going to be a number that people can reach in the event that there's an issue. But will there be people sitting in the CAPS office waiting for students to stop by for appointments? No, that's not going to be happening at that time. We would like to make this available to our faculty, is that if this is something they're interested in doing, and I'm pleased to see that there are some faculty that think this is a good idea. It's not for everybody. We never said it was for everybody. If there's some that want to do this and we can work it out, that's great. Otherwise, if there are things that a department really wants to offer and the faculty in that department aren't willing to do it, or if the department is really strapped on the budget, perhaps an adjunct would have to be used in some cases to cover those courses. But one thing that we've talked about before, and we really want to stress it, is this participation in these terms, like participation in the summer, is voluntary. There's not going to be coercion. Now, if somebody's on a 12-month teaching contract, an instructional faculty member on a 12-month contract, yes, they may have to teach in the summer. That's part of the deal. But a 9-month faculty member is not going to be coerced to teach in the winter intercession, the May semester, or the summer. They may be offered that opportunity, but there's not going to be anyone who's forced to teach during these terms.
So, Chuck, could you say one more time about the logic for having it in the summer? I think you're doing it because it covers 2 weeks where it won't overlap with the regular one. Is that the idea?
Well, there'd be 1 week. It would start 1 week before summer A, D, and C. It'd be 1 week, and it would only go for 3 more weeks. So it would go halfway through the A term, basically, quarter of the way through the C term. It just means if there's somebody who's got something going on that summer, they're traveling, they've got an internship someplace, they've got a couple of weeks where they can fit in a course, it's an opportunity. Is it for everybody? Absolutely not. But if there's somebody that says, hey, this is neat, I wasn't going to be able to take that A-term course because I have to report to my internship on the 10th of June or whatever, but now I can take a May-mester course and help myself out and improve my chances for graduation. These courses are not for everybody. What we want to do is give everybody who wants to do this an opportunity to participate when it's possible to do so. That's it.
Yeah. So maybe, what I could do is I was just thinking, instead of sharing the screen, let me do one thing, because there's some, and I can share all the comments. That's not a problem. And I could even share the screen in a minute, but maybe highlight some things on which we need response. So one, about logistics, there was a faculty member saying, if they are a 9-month faculty and they teach a summer and then they have administrative appointment, that means altogether now they've got 12 months covered, would they be eligible to teach an intercession? Because they're already getting 12-month salary.
I would say not. But
something to think about.
That's my reaction to that. If somebody's already got a full 12-month appointment, normally we wouldn't do that. Although if part of their summer is teaching, a May-mester course could be one of the summer courses that they would be teaching. That's possible.
Yeah, because they, if if they already have a, let's say they're teaching 2 months in the summer, and then they've got 1 month appointment as administrator, then probably that's 12 months already.
Yeah, so, but yeah. One of those courses, one of those months that they're teaching in the summer could be, potentially be a main
could be this, course. Could be this. Could
and that
be.
Wouldn't stop them from doing the winter intercession, would it, Doug?
Well, 12, if it's somebody on a 9 month contract, no, it wouldn't stop them from the winter intercession.
Right.
Anyone can participate in the winter.
But they said, subject to the restriction that 9 month faculty cannot be paid more than their 12 month equivalent. That's what the question was.
Correct.
Right? Because if they did do the winter and they then had all 12 months, then their full year's remuneration would be larger than 12 months.
Well, let me clarify. This is what I think will happen. Suppose there's somebody on a 9 month contract who gets a full 1/3 contract in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So they are effectively paid for 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
I see no reason why they couldn't teach in the winter intercession.
I see.
And get so an additional.
That would be like the 12-month employees who.
No, they would. They're still pay. A 9-month employee who gets a supplemental contract in the summer. They could get another 12.5% of their 9-month contract to teach the winter intercession.
So the answer is yes in the winter semester, right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so that's good. I think these questions then about the funding is still a puzzle, right? Because what you're saying is that the funding, university doesn't have separate pool of money for this. Because the summer money, right? I mean, when we get, department gets money for the summer, that is separate from the money that they get for the rest of the year. They get a summer budget.
Well, I don't think that's how that works under the new budget model.
Okay. I'm dated.
Well, yeah. But I agree with a lot of what you're saying. So from when the money comes from Tallahassee, we have one pot of money.
Uh-huh.
Period. We don't say, Governor DeSantis, we want to offer 2 courses in the winter intercession. You got to send us more money in order to do that. That's not going to happen. We have to manage the funds that are given to us. And the question is, how do we best do that in order to accomplish the mission of the university? And chairs and deans have to make those decisions. Am I going to offer a course in the winter session or not? And you know, many may decide no.
USF has
20 intercession, winter intercession courses.
Right. So the thing that I was, don't know the exact details, but there were in the survey several people saying that summer is not fully supported. And basically, there are more people who want to teach summer courses than their courses that are offered. And a lot of times, because full funding is not available, those courses that then given to adjuncts. So if that is the case in a department, and if that department then decides also to take part in these small memesters, then that creates even more of a problem for the summer courses. So how do you weigh that? How do you?
Well, that's up to the chair. The chair is the one who has to manage the budget in their department. It's as much as we'd all like to be in complete control of everything around campus, starting with me. I'd like to have that much control. We don't. Some things are delegated to the chairs to manage their budgets and to take care of their programs and their students. And, you know, as long as they're doing a good job managing that, where they may be doing a good job, even though there may be times when one of us would disagree with how they're doing it, but it's just a difference of opinion. But it's their responsibility to make those decisions about what's offered, what's the best way to use the resources that I've got.
So you know, Chuck, you learned so much on the job. So I just now learned why it is important then you have this whole issue of equity, right? Because if you're going to leave it on the chair, then the question is, how do they decide? I mean, probably it should be decided collectively in the department how it is done, right? Because—
Well, what we've agreed is that it should be decided on the basis of budget, student demand—
And the need.
Need and the availability of classroom.
So, you know, the good thing about it is that it does provide extra income, you know, but then the problem that it does is that, and this has come up in several of this questionnaire response also, that, you know, faculty are so spread thin, and that one break that they get in the winter, that's going to be taken up by this. And so, you know, the time that you get to just rejuvenate and come back and teach in the spring. Of course, you know, I agree that this is only going to affect a few people, but the point is that we are pushing people into doing this to make the extra money. You know, it would be better if the salaries were such that they didn't have to do this. You know, I mean, there's a question that keeps coming up, right? I mean, and then the thing is that if you're really expecting people to do research, this is taking away that incentive to do research, right? So they end up paying price for not doing research, but they end up making a little bit money. So you get into this dilemma.
Well, people have to make choices for themselves all the time. You had to make them as you're coming along in your career. I had to as well. Sometimes
all right.
You choose research. Sometimes you say, I got something at the house that needs to be taken care of. Maybe I'm going to teach a class this summer. People have to do that. All we're doing is providing those options. We're not trying to make a value judgment at all. You know, faculty that have research expectations, we're not changing anything. They're still expected to continue to excel in their research. No question about that. But if there's somebody who would like to do this, we're trying to put a mechanism in place so that it can happen. And we'll know how they're going to be paid. And we want to pay them fairly. And we think we're doing that, paying the way we're proposing.
Now, I think there's not an issue about the payment part, provided funds are available and provided it is, you know, people have, there's equity in terms of how it is allocated. There is one question here that has to do now with the quality, right? So if we are offering a brand new course that's not been offered ever before and so on, you know, there's probably no measure. But if we are offering a course that would be offered in any case, how do we ensure that the quality of the course that is offered meets the same standards as a similar course being offered during the semester? And you know, so in other words, what are the requirements, right? I mean, and you also don't want to, we have a lot of degrees that are certified and so on. And so how does all of this play into maintaining the quality of what we are offering?
Well, if somebody's offering an existing course, there's a syllabus for that course that's been approved. There's a textbook that's approved. There are learning objectives that have been approved by various committees around campus. Nothing's changed. You know, they still have to meet those standards. If students are taking these classes or in programs, they're going to be assessed as we do our ongoing assessment of our program. So there are going to be things that are done to make sure that all of our course offerings continue to meet the objectives that they're supposed to meet. You know, I don't think it's any different.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think the worry about, so how do we work it in? I see the worry coming from colleagues who would be offering these courses, and you know, part of it has to do with the content, and I agreed that you have to pack in 3 weeks what you normally offer in 15 weeks, right? So, you know, so you obviously have to have, and it's asynchronous, right? So basically it's just that the lectures have to meet that requirement that they be similar to what would be offered under normal circumstances. But then students, since it's not a real time, we are not requiring that they be meeting so many hours a day, right?
Right. What we're doing is providing material that gives them the same kind of learning experience that they would get under different circumstances.
So all the logistics about how do you do the quizzes, how do you test them, how do you know that they've gone through the material and all that, it has to be rigorous, just like a normal course.
These courses are going to have UCF course numbers on. There are certain expectations that people have when a transcript says this course was taken at UCF and this is the grade that I earned. You know, hopefully a passing grade from UCF means something. People can count on that meaning something when someone presents that on a transcript. That's still the case. And there's a course that I don't think I can deliver of the same quality in this format, I shouldn't do it. And if my chair doesn't think I can do it, my chair shouldn't let me do it. It isn't just, well, you know, everybody come, whatever you want to teach, everybody's going to teach one. That's not how it's going to be. It's got to be the right course. It's got to be the right faculty. The survey results that you presented, I don't think are surprising to me. I'm not surprised that some faculty say, no, thanks. I'm not interested. Others are saying, not for me. If my colleagues want to do it, have at it. Have a great time. I hope you enjoy it. And some of them say, hey, neat opportunity. About a third of them are saying this is a neat opportunity. We can't offer one third of our faculty one of these courses in the winter intersession. It's not going to work.
No, that's true. That's true. I think the main thing is that, and as you said, the brand will be there. The UCF name will be there. So we have to ensure. And then the problem that comes in is that if there's going to be no resource available, you know, in IT or anything to do with the CDL and so on, if they're all going to be closed, I think the summertime, we're not worried about it, but I think in the winter, how are faculty, unless they already have their course online, it's not going to be easy for them to develop a course and not have any support.
Yeah, one of the things that was clearly mentioned to me by a gentleman I spoke to at USF. He said, this is not the time. The winter intercession is not the time to offer a new online course.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something that faculty members offered before, there's been an opportunity to refine the delivery of that online material, this might work just fine. But trying it for the first time, trying to put together materials while the course is underway, that's just not going to work out very well at all.
So this thing, you know, one question, you know, again, and I'd be happy to share all of these, but this question that came up is that, you know, can we set any kind of restrictions on what percentage of courses are going to be taught by adjuncts? And what percent of the courses are going to be taught by regular faculty? The fear is that, you know, if 100% of these are taught by adjunct or even 70% of them, then how are you going to protect the branding of UCF?
I think the contract already speaks to that if it's equivalent to summer.
Yeah, I mean, We're saying the same thing. I think in the MOU we list the same things. It depends on budget. You know, what can a department afford? What are the needs of the program? Who's available? Who's willing to do it? Is for the intercession, the winter intercession, doesn't matter about classroom capacity, but there will be enrollment limits.
So Claudia, what did you have in mind? And
I think that in the summer, as long as there are full-time faculty who want to teach and there is funding for it, each unit has to have some kind of a policy to equitably make those opportunities available and before it is offered to any adjuncts. Correct, Chuck?
Yeah, yes. So that's right.
I'm not sure it's exactly as Claudia stated it. I'm going to try to look this.
Well, I think the main thing is that you cannot just be giving it to adjuncts. I mean, there is a recipe by which summer offerings are given, and depending on the department, it is that one from every rank or whatever have you, but there has to be some means by which it is divided. It is not in the hands of the chair to just hand it over to an adjunct.
Well, and that's not in the CBA either. The CBA just says supplemental supper appointments, when available, shall be offered equitably and is appropriate to qualified employees, not later than 5 weeks prior to the beginning of appointment, if practical.
Yeah, the
offerings and summer assignments will be made taking into consideration programmatic needs, student demand, and classroom and budget availability.
So I don't know. I mean, at least in physics, summer courses are never taught by adjuncts. They're always taught by departmental faculty.
And I think that's common in a lot of programs. My own experience in the College of Engineering and Computer Science is a lot of the faculty use the summer to focus more on their research. Many of them did not ask for summer appointments. Some did, and there wasn't sufficient budget in order to meet the student demand.
So, Chechak, it is a different thing if a lecturer or an instructor is teaching it as opposed to an adjunct teaching it. And so that's what we're talking about, that we wouldn't want these courses to be taught by adjuncts. Because then you're running into a problem.
And again, the chairs are going to have to make decisions about what they can best do with the budget that's available to them.
Right.
We want to make this, we are here right now. We are presenting this MOU to you because we want to make it feasible for the chairs to look to their own faculty, to look to their in-unit faculty as the resources that might offer these courses in these special terms.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
Sure. And I think we can put that in, I mean, if it is run like summer is run, then I think we have it covered.
And that's the language that I remember putting in the draft MOU is based on the language in the CBA.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's good. So you know, I don't think you want me to go through this verbatim because there are quite a few, and I'll be happy to share it so you can take a look, because there's some things that I've missed. I think there is that assurance that we need to give that people are not going to be forced to teach this, and you've said it over and over again that
I'll say it again. they're not going to be forced. If you hear of somebody who's being forced, I want to know about it.
So one last thing, or not last, I'm sure other things will come up, but one question does come up is that why do you have that provision about the tuition? There are a couple of things more. Okay, so with tuition, which was not just that, but there was in the comments that, you know, a number of students may not get financial aid for this. So let's talk about just the regular students. They may not get financial aid for this. So this is something that they will have to pay out of their pocket. And so what about that? I mean, why, you know, Bright Futures and all these other financial aid that people get, that would they be eligible? I said I should ask a question.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I can get in touch with Alicia Keaton.
May I call you back? I'm in a Zoom meeting.
And see what she says about it.
I'll call you back.
What we're here to talk about are the terms and conditions of employment of our in-unit faculty members. And, you know, we're not going to have terms in the CBA about student financial aid. You know, but I will ask that question. It's not something that belongs in the MOU.
I
understand the interest.
The other thing that came in is that it said that no faculty member or their children would be eligible for tuition waiver. Why was that necessary?
Well, because
I'm only asking what the people have asked.
We've agreed to make those waivers available in the fall the spring and the summer. And there are not going to be additional pools of those waivers that are going to be available for these special terms, at least not at this time. We have never done this. We don't know what this is going to look like. Don't know how many people are going to be interested in it. To get this started, this is what we feel we have to propose.
So let me open this up. Is there anybody who wants to ask a question?
Chuck, why?
I haven't covered. Yeah, go ahead.
Why? Chuck, you just said the benefit of tuition benefits, but why not in these sessions?
Because the way the collective bargaining agreement is set up, this would almost double the number of tuition waivers that the university has to fund.
So it would have to be rethought in the next BOKAR when we open again for negotiations. So, that's what you're saying.
What we're proposing right now is to make sure that faculty can be paid. That's number one. That's what this MOU is about, is to make sure that the faculty that want to teach in this program, who are not going to be coerced, but who want to teach in this program, get a chance to be paid. If this turns out to be successful, and I hope we all hope that it will be successful, the tuition waiver thing can be addressed again at a later point.
Monique.
If the university feels that library services, resources, and IT are important to student learning and to support of students and faculty during regular offerings, what is the justification for not having that support of those resources with this intercession?
Well, it's a good question. And I would suggest to you that a course that relies on face-to-face, in-person library work is not a course for this particular time frame. I mean, trying to say this is what the conditions are going to be like when the winter intersession courses are underway. What are the courses that make sense to offer it at that time? And there's some, including some that you and I have both probably taken, where we've spent considerable time in the library looking things up. That's not the right course for this. So we're not trying to make every course fit into the winter. We're trying to fit into the winter intercession the courses that will work well under those conditions.
Can you give us one example of a course that could work in 3 weeks with no support from IT, CDL, or the library?
Well, I'm not probably going to give you a very good example, because all those that I would think of, the ones that I've taught primarily, would not work under those conditions.
Right, but you've probably seen the data and talked to Dean Barry about the courses that are necessary to be taught. So which of those would work?
I don't have an example at the ready to share with you. I can ask Dr. Barry that very question and try to get some examples and get back to you on.
I think that would be really helpful to us, Chuck, if we had a better sense of what exactly are the courses that Barry is interested in being offered.
She's not interested in any courses being offered.
It's just not the case that any course will increase the graduation rate. There are particular courses that are missing, right?
What she's done is set up a mechanism so that people can offer courses that faculty want to teach, are willing to teach, and students are interested in. It isn't, you know, we're going to offer ENC 1101, which I think will not work under these conditions.
Okay, understood. So if you could get an example to us,
I will try to get
that would work, that would be great.
We'll do that.
So at the moment, you don't have courses in mind, right? I mean, there are this is something that once the MOU goes through, then you will talk to departments and...
Well, yeah, the units and the colleges are the ones that have to offer these courses. It's not coming from the provost office.
Yeah, so I think maybe what we should do, Chuck, is that if we can get some of these courses that would be helpful, we have some idea about how things are going about. I think for us, when I looked at all the response that we got from our colleagues, that was very, very helpful about, what they're thinking about. And I think they were, for example, they were also wondering about how this would play into ACIPS, your evaluations. Right? Are they going to be included, or are they not going to be included? And that is a whole different world, particularly by the winter semester, right? Because you've got this situation where you're packing something in, and it's not clear that everything will go over well, and then that can have a total negative impact on your teaching evaluation. And so, how are we going to deal with that? I suppose exceptions could be made. That this is not something that is going to be counted. But then it impacts everything else. So that's something also to think about. So it seems to me that there are lots of these fine details that we need to look into. So I'm just wondering whether what would be a good idea is for us to, we have seen it, we have questions for ourselves, we need some answers. So maybe we schedule another meeting where we can have some of these things resolved. I think we've gotten to the point where at least the university community is now aware that this is a possibility. And so there have been these questions that have been raised. And I think then that, of course, tells us some of the modifications that we'd like to make in the MOU. But if we could get response to a few questions, particularly some concrete examples, that would be very helpful.
Well, I'm going to try to get you answers, questions. We've got IT, CDL, library, financial aid, example courses. Those are the kinds of things that I'm going to...
If you want, I can summarize also and just send it to you.
That's great. I'm
there about six or seven questions. And,
well, Tola, you presented the documents, so you'll be sending those to me anyway.
So shall I just give that? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I'll just send you the documents, and then you can take it from there. I do have one sheet in which I did have about six, seven questions.
Yeah. I look forward to getting those questions. Okay. We'll take a look at those because of commitments that we've got. I'd like to propose we meet in 2 weeks on the 19th, if we can. Carly will help me follow up on that and make sure that we get that.
Can we meet a week later?
The 26th?
Yeah.
I think so. I think
that,
so.
That would help me. I won't be around on the 19th.
Got it. I'll shoot for that 1:30 time then.
Yeah, 26 would be better.
Okay.
Is that okay with other?
We'll have to check calendars, but if that's available, we'll try to do that.
Yeah.
I think that's the first day of exams. So for some of us, that might, we'll have to see if that's the time where we have to be an exam, but well, we can check. There's enough time to check.
She's right. That is the first day of finals.
What if we went on Monday the 24th?
That works for me.
Oh, I don't think first day of finals is necessarily disqualifying it.
Let's just do the 26th. I think
that's fine.
Okay.
The 24th is the last day of classes. So
yeah, that's not a better day.
You can't really win.
Students can cheat while we are.
So 4:26.
We'll try for that.
All right. 1:30. Got it.
One thing I'm going to say again, I think I may have said it before, what I want to keep in mind is what we're trying to do is put a mechanism in place so that the faculty can be paid.
Right. Yeah.
Some of the things that are coming up are good questions, and I'm going to try to get answers to these questions. But I don't know that those are going to affect any language that we agree to in the MOU. The whole purpose is to make sure that we can pay the faculty who are interested in doing this and want to teach the courses. And we want to give them information about what sort of resources are available to them so they can make a decision. Do I want to teach a course under these conditions? And I know, based on Monique's question, there may be questions that she's got about the library, whether library resources are available to her would make a difference. I get it. And, we want her to know what those conditions are going to be. Whatever those conditions are that the university has set, that's what they are. We have to teach under those conditions. If Monique and I can't teach because that just doesn't work the way we teach courses for the material that we cover, maybe we'll have to go to the May semester instead of the winter intersession. But we want to give people that information so they can make informed decisions about whether they want to participate in a particular term or not.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think we covered lots of grounds and brought up the issues that were there. So we'll take a look even further. And then, let's meet in 3 weeks then.
Yeah. And I'm going to thank you in advance for sending us that information. I appreciate the survey that you did. I think those results are very interesting.
They're very helpful. They're very helpful.
And encouraging. I think it says that this can work.
Mm-hmm. It also shows how thoughtful people are. They go through the whole, how it can affect you in so many ways. And the good thing about it is that everyone is looking out for the quality of education that we provide our students, and the wear and tear that it can have on those who are doing it under strenuous circumstances. So that both those points are very well taken.
Well, thank you all very much for your time this afternoon. We appreciate it. And good luck wrapping up the semester. I guess the next time we'll see
you. Thank you,
It'll be finals week.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. Everyone who joined us, and see you guys.
Talat, did you want to meet via yours?